that what we have come into the room to do. Right on. Here goes.
One, two, three.
Hello, Ann Arbor and the world. This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and this is It's Hot in Here. I'm your host, Jennifer Johnson, here with Andrea Kraus. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, world. Hello, Jennifer.
How are you weathering this final season?
Oh, just fine. Here at the University of Michigan, we're all in finals mode. So I'm
speak
actually
for yourself.
Pretty...
No, I'm in a finals mode of my own, but yeah.
So the rain is welcome.
It can be a pleasant excuse to nestle up with your books and your computer and not fall asleep. Keep cranking that coffee. And Dania, you are here joining us again. We're very excited about that. Welcome.
I am. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Great. Today it's extra special hot in here. We have two gentlemen from the Ravens Club in our very own town of Ann Arbor. Frank Farajan and Zach Zavisa will be joining us today. We'll also be talking with Claire Boland of the School of Natural Resources and Environment Studying Sustainable Systems, who has done a life cycle analysis on home-brewed beer with a team of folks. And then someone from Recycle Ann Arbor will be joining us to talk about their upcoming Earth Day festival this weekend, because that Earth Day apparently happened, and we should be celebrating that. There's a long history of that at this university, and we should not forget it. So in honor of the rain and in honor of wanting to swim and sleep like sharks, let's listen to a little music and then go into something loungy so we can talk about all that's good about the Ravens Club. Wow, that tune makes me want to have a cocktail. I don't know about anyone else. So we are here with Frank Farajan and Zach Zavisa of the Ravens Club. Hello, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Or afternoon.
We're transitioning now, so that's both appropriate. That's great. How long has the Ravens Club been in existence?
It's going to be 3 years coming up here next month.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, we opened on Friday the 13th. Three years ago.
Very fortuitous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very, very fortuitous. And y'all are on South Main between Washington and Liberty.
That's right.
I want to say. That's great. It's a wonderful space. I was saying at the break, congratulations for having a business there that has been successful and enjoyable.
Yep.
There's been a number of places there before since my tenure in Ann Arbor. So what is the Ravens Club all about, if you had to say?
Cocktails first, for sure. Definitely very good cocktails. Mm-hmm. And in the kitchen, we specialize in American small plates, just kind of more snack food that go with the bar, charcuterie, cheese, and things that are based around drinking with friends.
It's delicious.
It's pretty good, thank you.
And y'all also feature a lot of live music in my experience and going there.
We had a really good run with live music for a couple of years. Now we just, on Sunday nights, we welcome Heather Schwartz and her famed Heather Black project. So from, you know, starting around 8 o'clock till about midnight, soulful jazz and sweet tunes, and they're just awesome. So
she has a voice and a kindness like none other.
Yeah, we're so happy to spend Sundays with her, and she's certainly a friend of the bar, and you know, Yosef and Jesse and Mike and Ingrid are all fabulous as well. So it's been a great relationship, and we're super stoked to have them every week.
That's wonderful.
And how did this relationship get started? And with that, I'm really asking, how did you guys get involved with the Ravens Club?
I was actually working with Chris and Jeff, the owners, about 6 months before we opened our doors. So I've been involved pretty much since it was a construction site. And it's, you know, it's been quite a labor of love and a lot of hard work. And, you know, I think just in the last year or so, we finally started to put our fingers on what we wanted to do originally once, you know, Frank came here. So it's all coming together finally.
Yeah, and then I actually interviewed with the owners prior to opening. They chose another chef, obviously, but about a year and a half down the road, almost 2 years down the road, we finally linked up, and everything's been good since. So
they said we made a big mistake, or a reasonable mistake.
It was very reasonable. I mean, I was a young guy then, and you know, they went with an older, more experienced chef, and rightfully so. I don't blame them for it, and you know, it's hard to put your business in the hands of a 24-year-old kid.
It's true, but look at you now, and look at the place now. It's wonderful.
Can I ask you guys just to give me a little more insight into what your relationship with food and delicious cocktails was prior to the Ravens Club?
Yeah, you know, I've always been in the food and in bar scene.
And this is Zach speaking.
Zach speaking.
I should say. Yeah.
You know, our Arbor Brewing Company was a place I was spending a lot of time, made a lot of friends. Worked there for about 4 years. The sidetrack over in Depot Town, Ypsilanti. I worked there for quite a long time. Used to hang around the Del Rio a lot, you know. Just sort of been around this town for a long time, and never really committed much to, you know, a serious project until the Ravens Club came around. So it's been a blast.
Awesome. I heard that Wynton Marsalis just happened to stop by the other week.
Yeah, you know, and that's a kind of a testament just to how awesome the Heather Black Project is and those guys. His manager happened to be having a drink at the bar after one of their shows at Hill Auditorium, and was just totally impressed with what those folks were doing up on our stage, and got on his phone, and next thing you know, everybody's faces just turned white because Wynton Marsalis walked in with his horn. And, you know, we've done some pretty awesome events at the Ravens Club, and that was certainly the coolest 55 minutes I've been a part of in those four walls. And again, it all happened with due respect to Heather and Yosef and those guys. And it was awesome.
Local talent on many levels, linking up with international talents.
Yeah, super, super awesome.
Let's listen to a little bit of moments of one of Wynton Marsalis' tunes. This is Spring Yaounde. Thank you.
relaxing, wonderful music.
So tranquil.
I just want to be sitting in the Ravens Club right now, having some sort of delicious food or drink, both preferably. So one of the things that distinguishes the Ravens Club is, I guess, the attention that is paid to the ingredients that go into both the food and the drinks. And we have the chef, Frank Fejeron.
Fejeron
here, as well as the bartender, Zach Zavisa. So, Frank, I was hoping you could talk to us a little bit about how you go about choosing what goes on the menu, also where you get the ingredients for those things.
So our menu is it's somewhat limited compared to a lot of places in Ann Arbor. So each item really matters, and each ingredient that has to go in it, you know, when you only have 8 things to put on your menu, they need to be different, so we're very selective, for sure. We always start with flavor first, kind of what we want to do, whether we need 3 vegetarians, a vegan on there, gluten-free, meat. So that's where it starts is what we already have and what we want to work with. And then from there, we go into just our knowledge bank of what we know is coming up. Some of the work we do with local farms, White Lotus Farms in particular, we get with them, see what's coming up in the coming weeks. And then that's really where we get our start off point.
Where's White Lotus Farm? Never heard of it. I probably should.
They're a new farm. They're just west of Zeeb Road on Liberty. So once it's dirt road, the reason I know about it mostly is because my parents actually live like 2 doors down from them. They'll be at the farmer's market starting first weekend in May, I think.
Great.
But they make all of our bread. The only goat cheese we use is from them. They have a herd of goats that they use. They make all their own goat cheese, anywhere from Croton, fresh brie styles. We even have a tome, which is a harder cheese that they do. And then obviously their produce is just, it's insane. So they started out as a Buddhist community, and that's what they still are, and turned it into a farm, basically.
Turning those goats into delicious cheese.
Their cheese is amazing.
And you turn that cheese into memories at the Ravens Club.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Frank, I understand you spent your childhood in Ann Arbor, but then you've had the chance to travel and work in different areas around the world, including California, right? You worked in, Escondido, California?
Yeah. So I grew up in Northern California, just north of San Francisco, outside the Napa Valley. That's where I started cooking. I went to culinary school in Arizona, Scottsdale. And then after culinary school, I moved down to San Diego area and worked down there, which is where Escondido's outside of San Diego, where I met my mentor chef, Rico. And that really set it off for me. Like, I always wanted to cook, but he's the man who showed me what it means to really be a cook. I mean, the guy unlocked the doors and locked the doors every single day. So it was just me and him in this small little kitchen. We'd do lunch service. We'd go to the farmer's market, and we'd build our dinner menu at 2 o'clock. And then we'd work dinner.
Wow.
And then we'd be back in the morning.
Amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that, like, attention to actually sourcing the ingredients and making decisions as it happens in a day versus like printing out a massive hardbound menu that will always stay the same. And then you always have to keep sourcing these kind of industrial ingredients versus getting the things that are fresh.
Exactly.
Is that quite different in Michigan compared to your experience in California, or not so much?
In Ann Arbor, it's a little bit different. I mean, there's definitely, like, even our menu, we have things that we just don't touch. You know, they're always going to be on there because people do expect to be able to go to a place and have the same thing over and over. And I think that's just the nature of humans. Like, they want to know what they can get.
And what are your big hits in that front?
Our burger,
mm-hmm.
and our fried chicken and mac and cheese.
Those
will never leave, ever.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they're not based on produce and they're not based on seasonal ingredients. They're just based on good food.
Yeah.
So we don't have a problem with that. There's no variation, really. So as far as a restaurant like Deja Vu in Escondido, very chef-driven, very much people came there for the chef. What is he doing? What is he excited about? Whereas here in Ann Arbor, in a place like Ravens Club, it's not really about the chef, really. It's about the whole experience. So we have people are there for the experience, and they want good food, too, but they don't care that it's Frank's food. They're not there for Frank Fejeron or Zach Zavisa. They're there for the Ravens Club. So that's really, Ann Arbor's a touch different.
Mm-hmm.
But you have
maybe after this radio show, people will just be like, I gotta eat some of Frank's food. He will become so famous. Ann Arbor famous. which is hilarious. It's just why we're all laughing. That's awesome. What are some of the kind of rotating things that you're focusing on right now?
Right now, it's definitely all about spring vegetables.
Yum.
So you got your main ones, which definitely asparagus, rhubarb, English peas, morel mushrooms, and ramps.
Those ramps are so good.
Yeah.
They're
don't,
wild.
Don't tell our little intern that. I think he hates ramps. He's been cleaning them for the last 6 days, so he's not too happy about ramp season.
Ramps are the things that grow from garlic, is this correct, or something like that? I mean, what are ramps? I mean, I've seen them. I've eaten them.
They're similar.
On a farm. I mean, is it?
It's a wild, kind of looks like a green onion.
Yes.
Sort of like a spring onion. And then you can use the green, the top part. You can do anything with that. You can blanch it, turn it into pesto, use it how you would really any sort of leafy green like arugula.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bottoms, which are more fibrous, kind of like the white part of a scallion, we pickle those.
Mm.
So you have to take these little things and cut them into three different parts and do different things with them.
I feel like I had it grilled and it almost had a nutty flavor or something.
Grilled, they're fantastic. Grilled. Yeah, they're very versatile and they're so flavorful. And they're definitely one of the first signs of spring, so they're exciting to work with in the kitchen.
When do you open so we can get our ramps?
5 o'clock.
Okay. Couple hours, everybody. Have a snack. And then consider how to dig over.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about your relationship with some of the farmers that you guys work with. So when you have an idea for something new to put on the menu, do you go to them, ask them, hey, I'd like, you know, what could you grow this for us? Or is the process sort of flipped? Are they the ones that are coming to you and saying, hey, we've got really great ramps right now. Do you want to do something with it?
Our mushrooms are out of control.
Yeah, so it's kind of both. Okay. So you, like Tantre, I was at the farmer's market last Saturday and I was talking to Lizzie from Tantre and, you know, I know there's going to be rhubarb, you know, but I just want to know when it was coming in. She's like, well, we should have some in 2 weeks. Perfect. That's when our new menu goes live. So then basically you set up on an email system. You know, 2 days before market, they tell you what they're going to have and how much it is a pound. And you say how much you want to pick up. Just email them back and then they'll have it. A place like White Lotus, which is much smaller than Tantre, I can have them plan anything. Like I think it was early January, I met with Jess, who was their produce manager or farm manager. And, you know, she asked me what I wanted to grow. You know, so we went over the different kind of tomatoes I really like. You know, their lemon cucumbers they grow to make sure that we had enough for what we wanted to do. So some farmers, if they're able to, can do that. Some others can't. And a lot of times it's just based on relationships and what they can and can't do.
And when a farmer can't, when you really can't source it locally, what's the next thing you look at? Is it organic? Is it that you support another small farmer from a different locality?
No, not necessarily, because that's very hard to do, because I'd be asking a small operation like Tantre or White Lotus if they want to spend money on shipping. Right. And then the product itself, it's going to be an enormous amount of money, and it's not going to be worth using as far as produce is concerned. So as far as if we're really looking to use a local product, if it's not local and we're not going to try to, you know, I'm not going to try to get rhubarb from Arizona or wherever just to have rhubarb, you know, if I wanted to do it local. So, I mean, it all kind of ties in, I guess. It's a very organic and frustrating process at the same time.
But you have to maintain some flexibility, too, in terms of what you're doing in the kitchen and presenting.
Absolutely.
To your guests.
Absolutely. You definitely have to know. You have to be ahead of the game. You have to know what's coming in. You have to know your budget, how much you can spend. You know, sometimes some weeks you have to stock up on stuff and, you know, maybe pickle it. You know, we're using pickled rhubarb and the menu doesn't go live till next Friday, but I still have 3 gallons of pickled rhubarb in there ready to go.
Yeah, that's not going to go bad.
No,
it's exactly. Probably only going to get more delicious.
Exactly. So
that's awesome.
So it's definitely, it's a game to be played, but, you know, as the more and more you talk to farmers and the more better your relationship gets, the easier it gets for sure.
You have a lot of delicious meats at the Ravens Club. Where are these coming from?
The charcuterie meats?
Sure. And also, I've never had your burger, but if it's such a solid number, then
yeah.
I imagine.
So our the beef for our burger comes from Dave Steinhauser. He owns Steinhauser Farms. He's at the market every Saturday for sure, sometimes Wednesdays at the Ann Arbor Farmers Market. His beef's just great, and he's just an awesome dude. I mean, the guy's really cool. So we use his stuff. His beef's great. It's a good price, and, you know, it's very consistent.
If he was a jerk and he still had good beef, would you buy from him?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Just checking.
Exactly. And as far as the charcuterie is concerned, we really try to source from smaller companies, not necessarily bigger companies like Columbus or things like that. So we use kind of artisan style. So we use a lot of Cremonelli, which is, I believe, out of San Francisco. And we use Smoking Goose, which is these two young dudes out of Indiana. And they're doing cool little sausages that are, you know, they have like a gin and juice sausage. And, you know, they're using different meats. So we try to source the best product and not try to go to the big wigs for things like that.
I dig it. You can taste the investments in those meats as you eat them. Well, we're going to transition to some beverages. So let's hear a little bit from Homer Simpson and then from John Lee Hooker, and then we'll be back.
Well, beer, we've had some great times. When I was 17, I drank some very good beer. I drank some very good beer I purchased with a fake ID. My name was Brian McGee. I stayed up listening to Queen when I was 17.
This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and this is It's Hot in Here. And we are here with a full studio. It's getting toasty. Two gentlemen from the Ravens Club and also Claire Boland, a student of the School of Natural Resources and Environment, will be joining us very, very shortly. That's a nice tune, one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. And y'all make delicious cocktails at your bar, but you also offer very reasonable priced shots of dark liquor that is not sweet and beers all at the same time. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, American whiskey has become our focus pretty much as far as acquiring a collection. And certainly focusing on the education and the history thereof, and basically just trying to use this really wonderful brown liquor to put smiles on people's faces, and we call it work. So it's a great day for sure.
Have you? Yeah. Well, I want to ask you probably inappropriate questions about having to throw people out that are having too much fun in your bar. But perhaps we should start with, like, do you have so the focus is on American whiskeys, that kind of thing right now. Is there any other kind of guiding philosophy that is shaping your work behind the bar?
Well, first and foremost, it's customer orientated. You know, mm-hmm. it's a positive experience. It's a good service. You know, we always stress professionalism without pretentiousness. So
yeah.
I think, you know, speaking for our bar team, we're mainly focused on providing a good service first. And, you know, we're able to use our knowledge base and these mediums that we have by way of liquid to encourage a good experience and you know, educate people and hopefully impress people with, you know, the idea that you're sort of using, you know, obscure ingredients to some to create a very simple flavor concept, you know, a balanced mm-hmm. flavor. So it's a lot of fun, and we really strive for less is more, you know, focusing on 3 and 4 components. For many reasons. One, you know, from a service standpoint, it's just a lot easier. Again, you want people to get what they want in a timely manner, and that's really hard to do when you're working in stressful, loud environments, and you still want mm-hmm. to have somebody enjoy a $9 cocktail and say, "Man, that's amazing," you mm-hmm. know. So, and not really to put a value on quality, but I mean, let's face it, you know, if someone's paying $9 for a drink, we really want you to remember it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
What are some of your favorite drinks there to either make or enjoy yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like asking, when people, that's a very popular question, and I usually respond like, well, what's your favorite Beatles song?
Yeah.
You know, it sort of depends what kind of a day you're in, kind of a mood you're in. So with that said, you know, seasons certainly have an influence on what people drink, and especially myself and, you know, those of us in the industry. So it's sort of gin season that we're rolling into now.
Okay.
We worked really hard on creating a house tonic that's, it's real nice. So it makes a really nice quenching yet bitter, elixir, something nice on ice and in a warm day. Real nice. You know, we sell a ton of old fashions.
Classic.
And you know, again, like, these are all really, really time-tested drinks and proved that there's nothing wrong with them. So we're not really trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to do things well. And I guess we sell, well, about 4 cases of whiskey a week for our old fashions. So I think we're doing a pretty good job.
Whoa. And this town thanks you for that, apparently.
Yeah, you know, like, obviously we couldn't do it without the town, so it's reciprocal for sure.
What kind of whiskey do you guys use?
For our old fashions, we use Buffalo Trace's Eagle Rare single barrel. So it's a 10-year single barrel, really delicious whiskey, pretty typical, you know, corn, little bit of rye. But just real smooth, real full-bodied. But, you know, we probably have close to 100 American whiskeys on the list.
Including some tasty ones from Detroit, I want to say.
Yeah, you know, there's some great things going on down there. And those guys at 2 James are really pumping out some great spirits and, you know, really, really quality distillation going on. And we're real proud to feature their gin in one of our house cocktails. It's made the list two seasons in a row now. Their vodka is certainly a popular liquid as well. Their bourbon is really great in limited quantities, and we're really excited for next fall of 2015 when their uncut, unfiltered, straight rye whiskey will be released. So get in line, wait for that. It's going to be good.
Awesome. Maybe we should listen to a little bit of a tune in honor of one of your cocktails. This is the You Were a Kindness by The National. What should we be thinking about sipping as we're listening to this tune?
Well, you know, I was in Portland with my wife, and we were at a restaurant and bar we clearly had never been, and it was sort of a foreign environment for us. And my wife ordered a drink that involved cider and whiskey.
Yum.
And it's really a beautiful thing how flavors can be so comforting, yeah. You know, and relaxing. And so, she really enjoyed the drink, and, I was thinking the whole time we were out there, what could I do with this? And, Fustini's, the local oil and balsamic shop there in Carytown, has this beautiful, apple balsamic. So I used some of that with whiskey and a little bit of our bitters and hard cider. And I called it You Were a Kindness When I Was a Stranger, and just sort of fitting that, you know, how a drink can be sort of a friend when you don't really have much going else on around you. So it was kind of fun, fitting.
I've certainly felt that sipping on that one myself.
Yeah.
I like how you're using these terms liquid medium and thinking of collections mm-hmm. of bottles and flavors.
Yep. Yeah, it's cool. You know, Eskimos have 100 words for ice and snow. So you know, when you're sort of absorbed with distillates and liquor and, you know, the sauce, it takes on many different identities.
It's so. Like some kind of wonderful alchemy going on.
Yeah, you know, we're trying. So.
It brings a happiness. Well, let's listen to this tune, and then we'll be back for cool. some more strict nerdery.
Yeah.
Nothing is harmless. Baby, you better
Another great tune from The National, You Are a Kindness.
Is the whole tune You Are a Kindness when I was a stranger, or is that the bonus you added to the cocktail,
that
Zach?
That was just the bonus.
I like it.
Me too.
It's a nice short name for a drink.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that,
yeah? Here with us are Frank Fedron and Zach Zavisa. I'm sorry if I keep botching both of your names over and over. I swear by the end of the segment I'm going to get this right.
We'll
from
be testing
the
you.
Ravens Club. And also here to talk with us is Claire Boland, a master's student at the School of Natural Resources and Environment. Thanks for joining us, Claire.
No, yeah, of course.
So I'm hearing a lot of decisions being made about where to source your ingredients from, what to put on your menu. And I couldn't help but think back to my studies at the School of Natural Resources, which is sustainable systems. One of the main tools that we use is life cycle analysis, which is really meant to assess sort of the full environmental impact of a product or a service. Now, Claire, you took this industrial ecology class last year, right? And you actually did a life cycle analysis on homebrewed beer?
Yeah, so it was a group project assigned for class. So my team members were Braden Gilchrist, Sarah Miro, John Monnet. They helped do all the analysis, so I shouldn't take all the credit. But so we were brainstorming ideas of what to do the project on, and people typically do like paper or plastic bags, like pencil or pen. And John was kind of like, well, I mean, if I'm really concerned about the sustainability of my beer, should I be homebrewing it or should I be buying it from... We compared it to New Belgium because they buy their renewable energy credits and they have a wind farm that they power their brewery with. And so we were like, if that's the best case scenario, we should find out if we care about our carbon footprint enough and our alcohol consumption, what would be the most sustainable?
That's really interesting. So what were some of the things you had to consider when you were assessing the impact of these two different types of beer?
Yeah, so I think our project is pretty unique because most people take like the materials in the product and use this database of the energy carbon footprint to quantify it. And we decided, fortunately and unfortunately, to do data collection. So we spent like the 15 hours homebrewing, like every time you had to wash something out, like measuring all the water, measuring like how long the stove was on and what the average electricity draw was, which is pretty much a beast. I would overall say it was really fun, and we enjoyed the product, but it definitely was time consuming. So the things you have to kind of consider is just even like the soap that you're using, or when you're boiling water, how long the stove is on. And then we lucked out that New Belgium had really cares about the environment and had already done a life cycle assessment of their own beer. So we were able to compare it to them. So theirs obviously was professionally done, probably more thorough than ours. But it was interesting. It turns out that the brewing process, both either homebrew or brewing at New Belgium, is pretty much on par. New Belgium consumes a little more, obviously, because they have buildings and electricity and operations. We have a stove. But the biggest impact is the transportation and the packaging. Actually, the home brewing is something like, I have the numbers in front of me, but it's like 80% more efficient in terms of energy and CO2 emissions. But it kind of lends itself to, if you're going to pick up a growler at the place next door, you're probably on par with doing it yourself, and you've probably saved time. Life, like, yeah.
But there's a certain enjoyment in the brewing, and I think a lot of home brewers, from my casual surveys that don't involve any kind of numbers, don't take a lot of that data themselves. Like, that must add immense amounts of energy and attention to the work.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely, it's a labor of love. And so one of the questions that once we presented our results to the class, someone pushed back and said, well, what happens if I quantify my time? Like, I enjoy homebrewing a lot, and therefore I could discount it. And we were like, we can't put a time value on your time.
And what
time.
If I'm just a grad student without a salary? Is my time worth anything? Whoa.
Yeah. Get into that.
And money. Yeah, let's not talk about that.
But, you know, when we think of life cycle analysis, you know, usually we think of what you were talking about, carbon footprint. But a really big portion of it is what you're talking about right now, the cost impact as well, right? So we always have to reach a balance, which, you know, was a little bit like what Frank was talking about earlier, between you know, the different drivers within our decision making. So, you know, the carbon footprint may be one. Another one is the amount of money that we're spending, and then also taste. So maybe how did that go for you guys? How did your beer taste?
So between the four of us, we had had one person who'd homebrewed before, and he had the equipment but had only done it a couple times. So our beer was pretty flat. I would pay the, like, I think it broke out, the break even was like $3. I would pay the $3 more to probably have gotten back my evenings and had a better tasting beer.
But how about that A in the class you must have certainly got?
I was going to say, if anything, I learned something. And so we, after the project, all of us, like, the enjoyment part was kind of, I mean, you have to boil for a while. And so John made us all dinner, and we all, like, sat around and chatted for a while. So there was, the enjoyment factor of the project was far better than I originally conceived.
There's a lot of good social experiences to be had around food and beverages. That is absolutely true.
Frank and Zach, I don't know how familiar you guys were with the sort of formal process of life cycle analysis prior to hearing that little intro from Claire.
I never gave it much thought before today.
And so I guess, you know, one thing I always like to ask businesses whenever they're making decisions, especially, you know, trying to balance sustainability with the customer experience, with cost. Is this something that the life cycle analysis, is that something that you could see integrating into a, you know, your business, or is something that, you know, you can sort of draw from that into your business, or are there really other things that are much more important?
Big questions.
Yes.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, certainly. I feel like, in terms of, if we're going to talk local sustainability, and from the beverage side, it's a little bit different. Certainly, we don't want to replace quality with proximity.
We might be drinking a lot of bathtub gin,
you know,
and flat homebrew beer.
And, you know, like, again, we're in this business to make people happy, and I don't, you know, and you have to give a quality product. With that said, you know, you want to support what you believe in, and that's the balance. So again, yeah, working with distilleries like Two James and projects like, you know, Tantray Farms, and there's other people that come to us with local products that we certainly want to support. Again, it's when you're in the business like this, consistency is a huge factor, and the product has to be consistent as far as flavor, but, you know, also as a cost. So there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, and anytime you can support your community, obviously, I think that's the smart decision. With that said, you know, you have to make smart business decisions as well. So
that makes a lot of sense.
I want to ask about your bitters. Do you make them yourselves?
We do.
That's so crazy.
Well, you know, it's a lot easier than I think people imagine it to be.
Are bitters? I should ask that first.
You know, bitters are to cocktails what, you know, seasonings are to food. Mm. So with that said, it's a highly potent flavor, highly concentrated liquid. So the higher of the proof of liquid you're using, the more flavor it will extract from whatever you are imparting into it. So it's a fairly simple process as long as you know what flavors you want to use. And so that's kind of fun. You know, Jeff, who owns the Ravens Club, is sort of our master bitter maker. And so he'll... you know, find inspiration and create a certain form of bitters and gives it to our bar team. And then we, you know, collaborate and come up with some stuff for you guys to drink. So it's fun.
Awesome. Well, let's listen to a tune about beer, and then we'll be back, chat very briefly, or less than, more than briefly, with Recycle Ann Arbor about the upcoming Earth Day Festival, which will be the 43rd annual. This is These Ones and a song about beer, Grain Belt beer. I think this is an old 70s commercial that they're playing with now. Treat your thirst, Grain Belt beer. Treat your thirst, Grain Belt beer. Hi there, it's hot in here. And that was These Ones, I think. Hey, Danya works for Recycle Ann Arbor, and she is with us in the studio. Is that correct?
I do. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I am the Outreach and Zero Waste intern, and I work with Christine Chesler-Stahl, who is the Outreach and Zero Waste Coordinator for Recycle Ann Arbor.
Excellent. And Christine, are you on the line with us now?
I am. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, absolutely a pleasure. It sounds like you have a very exciting event coming up this weekend.
We do. This Sunday, as you mentioned, is the 43rd Annual Earth Day Festival. For the past 43 years, it's been a partnership between the City of Ann Arbor and a lot of other nonprofit and local organizations. So we're excited to invite the community out to come.
Great. And this will be at the Leslie Science and Nature Center on Trader
Road. Exactly. And it's going to be noon to 4 p.m. Lots of festivities all throughout that time period.
What kind of things can we expect to find there?
Yeah, so there are going to be on-site 40 local environmental and nonprofit organizations, table exhibiting. But then as well, the raptors, so the live birds of prey, will be there. They're going to be doing some demonstrations. The Critter House will be open as well to the public. And then, of course, the entertainment tent is going to be having lots of different musical acts, as well as our recycled runway judging competition from 12 until 4 p.m. So lots of things going on.
So wait, we can see raptors, we can hear music, we can see a fashion show.
Yes, exactly.
There's something for everybody there.
It's a family-friendly event, but really it is for all ages. So we do encourage everybody to come out and celebrate the Earth.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event. Christine, could you tell us a little bit about what you do at Recycle Ann Arbor and what Recycle Ann Arbor is all about?
Sure. Recycle Ann Arbor is a nonprofit organization. We primarily do the curbside recycling for the City of Ann Arbor. That's kind of what we're known for. But we also have an ongoing mission to just divert as much material from the landfill as possible. So we also own the reuse center, the drop-off station, and the Jackson Road facility, which really just buy into that mission.
Which is great. So if you're like, what am I supposed to do with this old computer
exactly.
or something, you can actually check you guys out and find out what you're supposed to do with it, mm-hmm. which is probably give it to you.
Yeah. Yes. In many cases, most of the things that you think that you can just throw out, there's probably an option for recycling or reuse that Recycle Ann Arbor can help out with. So we definitely encourage folks to check out recycleannarbor.org, where we have a really, really detailed A to Z recycling guide, where you can really think of anything that you want to get rid of. And like I said, there's probably an option to recycle it or reuse it with us.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christine, back to the Earth Day Festival. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about the role that Recycle Ann Arbor is playing? Because I hear that it's a zero waste festival. What does that mean?
Exactly. So a zero waste festival basically means that we, Recycle Ann Arbor, have worked very closely with the food vendors as well as the table exhibitors and any other organizations on site to make sure that what we're doing as a whole is really not hurting the environment. So all of these organizations and the food vendors present have made a commitment to try and, first off, reduce the amount of materials they're bringing on site, and then also reuse, recycle, or compost the other materials. So, for instance, the food vendors are going to have all compostable products. Any packaging that they bring on site will be compostable. And also the table exhibitors and other organizations are going to try and reduce their footprint by not having a lot of paper brochures and just handing out really what they need.
That's great. I do see you are encouraging visitors to bring their own reusable water bottles.
Yep, we will
That's
have
nice.
The water fountains working. Definitely you can bring that. And there will be probably some drinks for sale as well. But once again, all compostable products. So
wonderful. Must take a lot of time and energy to work
that
all out.
The Earth Day Festival, like I mentioned before, is organized by about 8 organizations this year, ranging from the City of Ann Arbor to the Ecology Center to Washtenaw Community College, of course, the Leslie Science and Nature Center as well. And we start meeting and planning this out in the beginning of January and have meetings pretty much until about 2 weeks before the event. So lots of time and energy.
Really a testament to the commitment of various groups in this town towards
our
natural environment and the happy social life that can be cultivated alongside it, of all that.
Speaking of social life, something that I've been really excited to help Christine out with is our recycled runway competition that's happening at the Earth Day Festival. Christine, do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So every year since 2007, Recycle Ann Arbor has put on the Earth Day competition. But for the past two or three years, we kind of tried to make it more of a public, I guess you could say, art exposure. And this year, what we decided to do was a recycled runway competition where entrants are going to have made their costume beforehand in all recycled and reusable material. And then at the entertainment tent at 1 p.m. on site, we're actually going to be judging them based on the creativity of their costume, the overall look, and of course, what materials they used. So there will be cash prizes given out for those entrants who win first, second, and third place.
And cash is very rarely thrown away.
Yes, right. So we're excited to see what people came up with, and obviously, given the amount of effort, we did want to give them a cash prize for their effort.
Well, that's really exciting. So this is happening at the Leslie Science Center in Ann Arbor from noon to 4 this Sunday. And I hope you have really delicious weather.
Yes, it looks like a typical spring day and no rain, so we are excited.
Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, we'll get out there. And that's at 1831 Traver Road.
Exactly.
In the great city of Ann Arbor.
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And telling us about this. And hopefully we'll hear more from you soon.
Certainly. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Wow. We only have 3 minutes remaining, officially, on our show.
So sad.
It's so sad. It's so sad. Maybe we could hear, like, a moment of a song, and then we'll regroup and be able to say our goodbyes. Or Gus is like, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know. Wow. We could recap what we've been doing. That's really exciting. So we've been talking with head chef of the Ravens Club, Frank Farajan. And would you also say head bartender? Do you have an official title that has a head in it or any sort of thing?
No, here, Zach? We're all I'm a bartender.
We're all in it together.
Yeah, sure.
It's cool. It's cool. I dig it. And you, at the Ravens Club, you really do create a place that is not pretentious, but is also delicious, right? I mean, guests do feel comfortable, I would say. I mean, I'm speaking for myself, but
if you say
those
so,
who like it.
Yeah, that's excellent feedback.
It's Thank not you. Like you got, everyone here is, because you go some places, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, but you're like, oh, these people are kind of jerks, or it seems like a major inconvenience for them to give you a $9 cocktail. Mm-hmm. And that's not the kind of environment that a lot of people like to spend their evenings at.
No. Yeah, we try to create an environment that I think we would all be comfortable in, mm-hmm. you know, and strangers love company and you know, people, like-minded people get along. So I feel like if I'm comfortable there, I hope you will be too. So
also, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. It seems you have the largest lamp I've ever seen in my life. Certainly. What is the origin of this lamp?
That's the Momus Design Group. So they've done a fantastic job making the lighting at our work beautiful. So it's a lamp shade, and that lamp actually, both of those lamps had been in the space probably since it's been that place you spoke of earlier at the Monkey Bar and yeah. whatever. So a lot of the decor, the design team,